Thank you, Dr. Hallmark. Susan, Wayne, I appreciate the invitation to be here today. It's an honor. This is in honor of Dr. Allen, renowned pedologist, mineralogist, teacher, mentor, twerp, and friend. Now, twerp is not a derogatory term. A twerp is a Texas wind erosion research person, of which Dr. Allen is an eminent member. We have several members in the audience, Wayne being one, and we show up regularly and monthly at a meeting and discuss all things Aeolian and a few other things. And it's an honor to be here today. A little overview of my presentation. First, I'll define the scope of what I'll talk about related to soil formation, how it links with Aeolian processes, what are Aeolian processes. Talk a little bit about the characteristics of the sediment, some of the local geomorphic effects such as coppice dunes and islands of fertility that we've heard already about today, and then link it to global effects to show you that indeed Aeolian processes in arid and semi-arid regions affect much more than just these regions. They affect a long area. Now this presentation hopefully it will give you a backdrop of what some of the other people were saying when they were mentioning dust and these sorts of things. Aeolian deposits occur over much of the globe. Their origin and subsequent development varies widely. Today I'm going to focus on the Aeolian processes in arid and semi-arid dry land regions. This map is a map of all the Aeolian deposits around the globe. You can see many in the dry, hot areas. You see them in the northern climates. And far south, we have lus and sand seas, and we'll discuss these things. So, how do Aeolian processes affect soils? First, we need to have a little bit of a review of what soil formation processes. And I'm a little old school. You know, I still go by what Hans Jenny said. When our first definition of soil formation, way back in 1941. I believe Janice had a slide on this. And, you know, he said that soils were the result of climate and organisms acting on apparent material as conditioned by topography through time. Aeolian processes with effect through time. They create apparent material and they are apparent material and they're acted upon by climate and organisms. Roy Simonson in 1959 kind of fine-tune soil formation for a particular location. He said that soil formation was due to additions and losses to the soil and subsequent and translocations and transformations within the soil. That's how the soil forms. And we talked a lot about that today. And specifically, Aeolian processes are looking at the additions or wind erosion, the additions and the losses. And these subsequently are affected and have translocations and transformations within the soil. Wind erosion occurs wherever soils are bare and loose and dry and subjected to erosive winds. Now, there could be some material on there, but the winds have to get to that soil surface. You can see the various kinds of processes within wind erosion. This is a wind profile blowing against that soil. Particles about 500 microns to 1,000 microns roll or creep. Sometimes they are booted by these bouncing or saltating particles. Saltating particles generally move within about a meter of the soil, although some can go higher. The saltating or saltation is roughly from about 500 microns to 100 microns. And then the suspension, less than 100 microns. The 20 to 80 microns is what we would call lus. Silt-sized material, it will go from tens to several hundreds of kilometers from the source, and the material that's less than 20 microns can become globally distributed and go vast distances in the atmosphere. Wind erosion is alive today. This is a dust storm we had in West Texas, Meadow, Texas, last September 3rd. Now, if you look at the sediment within that cloud, this is a view of, we took six storms and measured the sediment with height. This is a fraction of sand, silt, and clay. Very close to the soil surface, the material will be very similar to the source. As you go higher in elevation above the soil, the sand, of course, gravitation will tend to drop out. The silt and clay will tend to increase. The material that is blown is going to be the material that we find from a source will depend on this mix of sand, silt, and clay. And this is a very general example. This will happen wherever erosion occurs, but the numbers will depend on what kind of source material you have. If you have no sand, you're not going to see it. There are soils in the Columbia Basin that are silts, and so you'd have a different distribution. But the idea is this material will carry nutrients. It'll carry all kinds of materials, biological materials, organic material. This is these samples that we collected, this gives you an idea of the top line is the amount of these the extractable cations, CEC, and organic matter. The line below gives you an enrichment ratio. That's the enrichment of this dust from the source material, the proposed source material. Generally speaking, in this, from 15 centimeters to 2 meters, is about enrichment ratio of 2. As you go higher, it can be higher. Generally, within the first several meters of the soil surface, the enrichment ratio varies from about 2 to 7. The amount that can be removed in wind erosion can be quite large. We did a field campaign in West Texas during the 90s. We measured the loss on a bare soil, smooth, erodible. It varied from 40 to 290 megagrams per hectare per year. Now, 11 is a so-called sustainable T value, 11 megagrams. We have from 40 to 290. Of course, in the agricultural setting, we have ways to mitigate erosion. There are all kinds of management practices we can, but in this particular case, this gives you an idea of what a fine sandy loam can do under West Texas winds. Huge amount. This creep and saltation material is trapped near the source and can impact the local vegetation and the surface features. For example, here we see a series of slides going from a grassland to a coppice dune landscape. We had that talk that mentioned the difference between the inter-shrub areas and the shrub areas. If you have an area that is in shrubs, it's degraded, and you have these bare areas, that material, that wind can start moving right down the alleyways, if you will, and be captured by shrubs. And it will affect the local geomorphology or the landscape evolution. And the differences, there are differences in the properties, as he said, between the shrubs and the interspaces. A lot of different research in this area. Compared with the inner shrub areas, the shrub have a higher porosity, higher infiltration capacity, higher water holding capacity, hydraulic conductivity, structural stability, organic matter content, and lower bulk density. This is going to drastically affect the rate of soil formation between the shrubs and the inner shrub areas. And this particular study didn't even mention the animals. Now, of course, and that will be an effect at all as well. And other studies, they've looked at the surface nitrogen and carbon and found out that, and other many other studies, that it's also greater under the plants. You don't have to have erosion for this to occur, as we saw in the arid study. In this particular, in areas that you have wind erosion, it can be accentuated and quite synergistic interaction there. Now, how about the materials that go further? We talked, that was creep and saltation mainly. Where does all this material go? That really depends. Wind and sediment barriers have an impact. There's a recent study by Hermes and Graham. Great study. I'd like to, if you're interested in this topic, take a look at it. It's in the SSSAJ, the first issue of this year, where they looked at the erosion in California at the Fry Mountains, and they describe how the mountains, or the sediment, depends on the wind direction, and the wind was traveling in this direction. Very close to the base, we had sandy situation, and the dust, other properties, was distributed across the mountain, and the mountains acted like a barrier, much like a wind barrier you might put in the field. And that was a very interesting study, and so I would like to refer you to that. This is dust that, not traveling great distances, this is maybe tens of kilometers, but it's a very interesting study of this material that's traveling close to the source, and you can relate it to the source down in this region. Other studies have focused exactly on that. How does this source distance affect the soils. And there was a study by one of Dr. Allen's students, 1975, Sateko. He and Dr. Allen did some transects. One transect was 390 kilometers in West Texas, and he showed how the size of the sand tended to decrease from distance from the source, and the source here was the Pecos River. And we've been doing these kinds of studies in Aeolian sediments for quite some time. There are a lot of classic studies in the Midwest on lus, and they talk about how the lus changes as one extends away from the source, particularly if the Mississippi River, you have thick lus deposits, and they thin out and change properties farther from the Mississippi River. But what about lus in arid areas? If you look at this graph carefully, these yellow and brown areas are lus. And again, we're going to define that in just a moment. I have a very specific definition of lus, but you see lus around desert margins. Look at all this lus in desert margins, and we wonder, well, how does that occur? There's a classic paper in 87 by Soar and Pai. They define lus as material that's transported by medium silt relatively close to the source. You have to have an availability of a silt source. You have to have good wind to move this material so far. And you had to have a suitable trap. Then once you have this silty material, what's going to stop it? Well, topographic obstacles, similar to what maybe we saw with Hermes. You could have moist ground or vegetated surfaces. These are easy to imagine during the Pleistocene near the glaciers, but how about deserts? Well, they demonstrated that, and they hypothesized that these things happen. The lus would move during the glacial times in these arid and semi-arid regions when we had these strong winds. We didn't really know exactly the winds. And so I'm just wondering, when Dr. Wilding was talking about, you know, the dust of today didn't look like the dust they had then, but what was the source back in the glacial period? How far could that dust have traveled? And so the only place we saw that is in Sinai, Soviet Central Asia, and China. And that's the only place that they believe it occurred because they have all these things available. Other deserts simply lack traps. Other deserts lack silt source. And he said, during the Holocene, we've had these dust falling. Why don't we get lus now? Well, we don't have landscape stability and enough dust sources. There have been lots of studies of dust where they're putting marbles, they're putting buckets, they're putting all kinds of things, upside down frisbees. And we're measuring dust all over the world today. We have a couple in West Texas. Here's the study that Dr. Wilding was talking about, Ravenhorst study. Well, how does this material affect the soils? It can affect the soils substantially. And I really don't have time today to go into how all this works. I had to take out several slides to get it down to the time I have, but this is such a rich area of study even today. For example, it's been clear that Saharan dust have been identified as the most important parent material of the soils of the Caribbean islands and the Florida Keys. Here you can see the source from northern Africa going to Europe. It's going across the Atlantic to North and South America, affecting soils. Here we see the dust in Asia going across to North America and, happily, right over Hawaii. And here we have in Australia going east and west out into the oceans and affecting areas. Hawaiian Island rainforests receive nutrients from Asia, and these are actually sustain the productivity of the rainforest in Hawaii. Chadwick pointed this out. And phosphorus was a big limiting factor. And finally, I just want to mention the dust affecting ecosystem and soils in around the Mediterranean, these so-called terra rosa soils. These are soils that are deep red soils over various parent materials. Muse just recently did a great study to show how dust from Africa is going across the Mediterranean. Here's Mallorca, and creating terra rosa soils. And these are all over the Mediterranean region. And so these semi-arid and arid environments are affecting much larger regions just within these regions. It's So Aeolian processes do indeed impact soil genesis, mineralogy, and landscape evolution in arid and semi-arid regions and far beyond. And we've got a lot more to do. If you're interested, there is an International Society for Aeolian Research. There is our website, www.aeolianresearch.org. And you can find us on Facebook, ISAR. Thank you.